Now, the Fed's big news is playing abroad.
This podcast is supported by Netflix Instant Streaming. Thousands of TV episodes and movies on your computer or mobile device instantly streamed by Netflix to save you time, money, and hassle. Free 30-day trial now at netflix.com/APM.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Mark Garrison in for David Brancaccio with the global perspective on business and economics. And let's get right into it and do the numbers. Stocks are down in global trading. In Europe, markets down more than 2%, 2.2% in London, almost 2.4% in Germany. Asian markets closed sharply lower, with the Nikkei dropping 1.7% and shares down 2.8% in Shanghai. Traders there reacting to yesterday's Fed news, of course, but also to dismal manufacturing numbers out of China. Yesterday on Wall Street, the S&P lost 1.4%. The Dow dropped about as sharply, closing at 15,112. Now, let's go to Asia for a closer look at what's happening there. The BBC's Rico Hizon is in Singapore. Hello there, Rico.
Hello, Mark.
So from Asia's viewpoint, what was the most important news out of the Fed yesterday that drove the kind of sell-offs we saw there today?
Well, basically, the catalyst for this fall in Asian markets, Mark, was the Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke, who signaled a likely end to asset buying by the middle of 2004. And this basically hit share prices, currencies, commodities. All fell by the wayside as investors were basically spooked by these negative developments. And also adding to the pain, Mark, apart from the U.S. Federal Reserve, was China. The Chinese manufacturing output took a surprise spill in the month of June to its lowest point in about 9 months as demand for Chinese products continued to weaken. So basically it was a two-pronged attack.
And let's talk more about that manufacturing number that came out of China today. What do investors there in Asia expect from China's economy now?
Well, the mainland's economic growth basically slowed in the first quarter, Mark, to 7.7%. So this fall in the manufacturing output now raises questions about whether the mainland economy will have a full-fledged recovery. You know, this data basically follows a slew of other weak economic indicators the previous month in May that showed industrial output, fixed asset investment, which is a key measure of government spending, exports and imports, all weakening.
Okay, the BBC's Rico Hizon in Singapore. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
The Supreme Court could announce as soon as today whether it'll consider a case on recess appointments made by President Obama. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer reports from Washington on a decision that could have major impact on jobs and consumers.
Initially, recess appointments were made for practical reasons when the Senate was out of session for long stretches as senators slowly made their way to the Capitol on horseback. Now presidents make recess appointments when they don't think their nominee would be confirmed by the Senate. The director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, Richard Cordray, is a recess appointee. If the Supreme Court casts doubt on the constitutionality of some recess appointments,
there will be a cloud of uncertainty hanging over every action taken by Richard Cordray.
That's lawyer Alan Kaplinsky. He represents businesses that are regulated by the CFPB. He says the Bureau's authority over non-banks like payday lenders could be called into question. Ed Mirzwinski is a consumer advocate for U.S. PIRG. He thinks any court ruling would preserve the CFPB's authority.
The court can choose to throw the director out without throwing the rules out,
including new mortgage rules the CFPB issued to prevent another housing crisis. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
This podcast is supported by Netflix Instant Streaming. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your computer, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. Streamed now by Netflix, a great value. Netflix Streaming has lots of movie and television options, including past seasons of House of Cards, Breaking Bad, and Arrested Development. Watch them using Netflix Instant Streaming and find thousands of other TV series and movies during your free 30-day trial at netflix.com/APM.
Adjunct and non-tenure track professors used to be a minority on campus. Not anymore. Now, many of them are joining unions, hungry for benefits and job security they currently lack. And in a twist, they're not always joining the unions you might expect. Reporter and sometime professor Sally Herships has more.
Comrades, I'm going to share with you one of academia's dirty little secrets. Tenure and non-tenure track professors, like me, haven't always gotten along.
I've worked in places where I have walked down the hall and had full-time faculty members just walk past me and not even look at me. Let's not even talk about talking about curriculum issues and trying to work together as colleagues.
Maria Maisto is president of New Faculty Majority, a nonprofit that works with non-tenure faculty.
It's just like a caste system almost?
A caste system is how some people have actually described it.
That system is one reason, Maisto says, as more part-time and adjunct professors have joined unions, they've avoided the ones that are traditionally academic. In Pittsburgh, they've joined the steelworkers. In New York, it's auto workers. And in D.C., it's the service employees. Kip Lornell is an adjunct professor at George Washington University. He says when non-tenure professors at his school organized, they approached the American Federation of Teachers.
We figured, let's go to some place that already represents teachers. We spoke with them, and their attitude was, that sounds interesting. And that was about the extent of their interest.
It's not that they were uneager. They didn't understand what was happening.
Richard Boris is executive director of the National Center for the Study of Collective Bargaining in Higher Education. What was happening, Boris says, was that part-time and adjunct professors were taking over the profession. Traditionally, 75% of professors were tenure track, but now the numbers have switched.
This process occurred over the last 15 years in such small increments that nobody quite figured out what was happening.
But they've figured it out now. New Faculty Majority's Maria Maisto says traditional teachers' unions are starting to welcome non-tenured members with opened arms. This is Sally Herships for Marketplace.
And finally, public school students in Los Angeles will soon tote iPads to class instead of textbooks. The second largest public school district in America is starting with $30 million worth of iPads, part of a multi-year deal with Apple. The company says there are 10 million iPads in schools now. Transforming textbooks was a longtime goal of Steve Jobs. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.